Well, chance favors the prepared mind, they say. Pancho was smart enough and fast enough to use what chance offered her. He found himself at the sensor bay again. There wasn't room for a chair. Fuchs was standing, staring at the same display screen he'd been staring at the last time Dan had looked in at him. "Anything interesting?" Dan asked him. Fuchs stirred as if being awakened from a dream, but from the worried expression on his face, Dan thought it might have been a nightmare. "What is it, Lars?" "I've found what created the hotspot in this section of wire," Fuchs said, his voice grave, solemn. "Good," said Dan. "Not good," Fuchs countered, shaking his head. "What is it?" Pointing to the curves traced across the display screen, Fuchs said, "The amount of copper in the wire is diminishing." "Huh?" "The wire is superconducting only if its composition remains constant."
"And it stays cooled down to liquid nitrogen temperature," Dan added.
"Yes, of course. But this length of wire, its copper content is diminishing."
"Diminishing?
What do you mean?" "Look at the curves," Fuchs said, with some heat. Rapping his knuckles on the display screen, he said, "In the past 2 hours, the copper content has gone down 6%.
Dan felt baffled. "How could...
"As the copper content dwindles, the wire goes from a superconducting state to a normal state. It begins to heat up. The hot spot boils off some of the nitrogen coolant. The hot spot grows. It was only microscopic at first, but it eventually became large enough for the monitoring sensors to detect it."
Dan stared at him. "There is only one agency that I can think of that could selectively remove copper atoms from the wire."
"Nanomachines?" Dan squeaked. Fuchs nodded solemnly. "This length of wire was seeded with nanomachines that remove copper atoms and release them into the liquid nitrogen coolant. Even now, they are removing copper atoms and letting them flow into the air of this compartment."
"Jesus H. Christ on a bicycle," Dan said, his insides suddenly hollow.
"That's why Humphreys grabbed Cardenas. She's the nanotech expert."
"We are infected," Fuchs said.
"But you caught it in time," Dan countered. "It's only this one length of wire that's infected."
"I hope so," Fuchs said. "Otherwise, we're all dead."
Humphreys Trust Research Center. George stood to one side of the walkway leading into Humphreys' house. It had been eerie, riding down the escalators wearing the enlarged stealth suit that Ike Walton had cobbled together for him. George couldn't see his own feet. At one point, he nearly tripped and tumbled down a flight of escalator stairs. Walton had looked like a naughty little kid caught peeking at dirty pictures when Stavanger had confronted him in his office and ordered him to enlarge the stealth suit to fit George. Red-faced, Walton had stammered that he'd need help from the nanolab technicians, and that would ruin the secrecy that had shrouded the stealth suit since he'd first invented it. "Well, that can't be helped," Stavanger had replied tightly. "Security's already been breached." In the end, Stavanger himself went with Walton and George to the nanolab and asked the chief technician to clear out the lab and work with Walton by herself, in total secrecy. Once she understood that Dr. Cardenas's life might be at stake, she quickly agreed. "I'd heard rumors about a stealth suit off and on," she marveled, once Walton explained what was needed. "Don't add to them," Stavanger pleaded. Walton had the programs for the nanomachines buried in his personal files. Within hours, he and the chief technician were watching a spread of darkly glittering stealth cloth glowing on a lab table. George stood slightly behind them, eyes goggling, as the invisible virus-sized machines busily turned bins of metal shavings into his new suit. Now he stood at the entrance to Humphrey's house at high noon, trying to figure out a way to get through the front door without being detected. The huge cavern was in its daylight mode, long strips of full-spectrum lamps shining brightly. Wondering if the people inside the house came out for lunch, George edged closer to the door. It swung open, surprising him, and a pair of Humphrey's research scientists came out, deep in earnest conversation. George knew they were scientists from their costumes. The guy wore a shapeless open-necked shirt and faded jeans. He had a long ponytail down his back as well. The woman was in a light sweater and loose, comfortable slacks. They were talking about the life cycle of some Latin-named species. George slipped behind them as the door started to close and held it halfway open with one extended arm. The two scientists went on their way, chattering intently. George pushed the door open a little more and peered inside. Two hefty men in blue security uniforms stood inside, looking bored. George slipped through the door and then let it swing shut. The two guards never noticed. They were talking about last night's football tournament, videoed live from Barcelona. An older man in a dark suit came out of a doorway halfway down the hall. He had the frozen-faced expression of a trained butler. George tiptoed past the guards, peeking into each open doorway as he went. He could hear voices from his left and found a doorway that opened onto a long corridor, with plenty of people shuttling from one office to another along its length. That must be where the research staff works, he thought. Don't they break for lunch? It was difficult to pick up odors from inside the suit's face mask, but George caught the unmistakable scent of steaks on the griddle, something he hadn't smelled since he'd been on Earth. Dykes, he thought. Humphreys doesn't mind spending his fucking money on all in steaks up here. The hallway ended in a busy stainless steel kitchen big enough to keep a good-sized restaurant going. Staff eats in, George realized. At least they do for lunch. Cooks and assistants were scurrying back and forth, pots were boiling steam, and an industrial-sized grill was sizzling with thick steaks. George counted 11 of them. A banker's dozen, he said to himself. One of the dark-uniformed maids was putting together a much more modest meal on a large teak tray. A crisp salad, a small sandwich, a slice of melon, and a pot of tea. A woman's lunch, George thought. He followed the maid as she carried the tray past him, down the hallway and up the stairs to the second floor. One of the doors along the upstairs hall was guarded by a bored-looking young man in a gray business suit. He saw the maid approaching and opened the bedroom door. Lunch is here, Dr. Cardenas, he said. George stopped as the maid went through the bedroom door and came out again less than a minute later, the tray empty at her side. She closed the door. George heard the lock click. The guard gave her a smile, and she smiled back, but neither of them said anything as she headed back for the stairs. George leaned against the wall a half-dozen meters from the lethargic guard, who sat on a wooden chair and pulled a palm comb from inside his jacket. From the beeps and peeps, George figured the guy was playing a game to pass the time. Okay, George said, folding his arms across his chest. Cardenas is in there. She's still alive? Now, how do I get her at? Alive. He spent the better part of an hour prowling along the upstairs hall, checking out the stairway, studying the lone guard. Humphreys apparently insisted on a dress code for his servants, George figured. The guards wore suits. The maid and the kitchen help wore uniforms. The scientists stayed on the other side of the house. They'd be no problem, George decided. The maid returned with the empty tray, went into Cardenas' room, and came out with the lunch dishes. George thought Cardenas might be on a hunger strike. He had hardly eaten anything. Shortly afterward, Humphreys himself came up the hall. He was dressed casually, a white velour pullover and navy blue well-creased slacks. The guard snapped to his feet and stuffed his still-beeping palm comb into his side pocket. Humphreys frowned at him and motioned impatiently for him to open the door. The doors kept locked, George realized, as Humphreys stepped into the room. He waited until the door was almost shut, then tiptoed to it and pushed it slowly open. The guard paid no attention, engrossed once more in his video game. George let the door swing halfway open, then deftly slipped into the room. Humphreys noticed it. Frowning, he marched to the door and snapped at the guard. "Can't you close a goddamn door properly?" Then he slammed it shut. Suppressing a chuckle, George edged into a corner of the room. Dr. Cardenas was standing tensely by the only window. It was a super room, George thought. Big pieces of furniture made from real wood. Hauling it up to Cellini must have cost more than the whole kitchen staff's salaries for 10 years. How do you feel today? Humphreys asked Cardenas, crossing the oriental carpet toward her. I want to go home, she said flatly, as if it were a request that they both knew would be ignored. Sure enough.